This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. Stanton's Giancarlo Nialli is a pastry chef in the old-school European sense of someone who creates art that also tastes good. Giancarlo arrived at WMRA carrying a white cardboard pastry box so as to be able to talk specifically about what he creates. So naturally, the first thing I did was open it.
I'm gonna bake you a love cake. I'm gonna bake you a love cake. I'm gonna put it on a love plate and serve it up to you. I'm gonna mix it in my love bowl and add a little bit of my soul. I'm gonna put it in your cake hole. I'll serve it up to you. It'll be so moist, it'll taste so good. Then you'll feel my love deep inside of you. I'm gonna bake you a love cake. I'm gonna bake you a love cake. I'm gonna put it on a love plate and put it in your mouth. Cake.
I am opening the box. Oh my goodness. Oh my. Now tell me, what is that?
That is the shape of it is a bomb. Not literally.
Not a kapow bomb.
No, but it's a dome.
Yeah.
But I call it a bomb. But the inside is a Bavarian, which refers to something very light. Heavenly. It's a combination of fruits, strawberry, blackberry, blueberry, and raspberry, all cooked to a sauce-like, and whipped cream and gelatin. So it's very delicious. And then on the bottom, they are fresh raspberries, upside down, because you mold it upside down, and then chocolate ganache and a layer of cake. Then it's set into the refrigerator to chill, and it sets up, and then glazed. And then decorated. And the glaze is a chocolate ganache. When I refer to ganache, it's a French word for glaze.
And it is absolutely smooth.
Thank you for pointing that out.
How do you do that?
Well, you see, that's why it takes years to master what I do. It's a lifelong profession.
This is, I'm not sure I've ever said this in my entire life, but this is too pretty to eat.
Well,
you know, but that's not going to stop us here at WMRA.
Okay.
We're champion eaters. And the bomb is surrounded by pretty little.
Well, there are some chocolates.
Yes.
Cardamom tea from Persia. It's a black tea flavored with cardamom and a single bean chocolate from Colombia. I highly recommend this chocolate if you can find it. It's Cordillera, but it's a fair trade company. What pleases my soul, excuse me, I get emotional, but it's supporting 300 families.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this company is fantastic. It's phenomenal.
So it's fair trade with a vengeance. That doesn't sound quite right, but...
And being single bean, it's only one species of cacao, because nowadays when you buy something, you don't really know where the product originated. If we say Belgian chocolate, well, in Belgium or France or Germany or Italy, cacao doesn't grow there. It comes from other areas, specifically 30 degrees north of the equator or 30 degrees south. Huh. All the way around. But the best cacao is in this hemisphere.
No kidding.
But the world largest producer is in the Ivory Coast, west coast of Africa. So not only in this profession, you have to pay attention to the current affairs. And luckily, I listen to NPR.
Yes. Okay. Now, it's not just chocolates. There is what looks like a petit four.
A petit four. Very good.
Yes.
A+.
Thank you.
Classic petit four. It's an almond cake, and I call it frangipane, Italian word for almond bread, with a layer of marzipan, raspberry jam, and then glazed with classic fondant.
And the design, the way it's tilted to me, looks like a tiny chocolate thread outlining a guy racing on a bicycle.
Well, very good. I love it.
And then we have... strawberries.
Mm-hmm. A chocolate dipped strawberry.
And I'd like to point out that these are not just dipped strawberries. They are set in a little pastry shell, and then they are, all the decoration is fine-lined and graceful, and is spare the right word? It's not Baroque. It's un-Baroque decoration. Mm-hmm. And then we have some kind of puffs, puffs.
Italian cream puff.
Yum.
Filled with a diplomat cream. Diplomat, it's a nice fancy word. I like to say diplomat because it can bring peace. Because from a historical point of view, pastry chef in the early days, I mean, we can sit here for hours to examine the historical aspect of pastry. But we're talking like in the Middle Ages, during the Renaissance, pastry was a very highly regarded profession that once you served a specific pastry, that kind of brought aspect of conversation and making peace.
To feed is to love.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have one last thing, which looks like candied orange peel.
Yes, it's candied orange dipped in also, again, single bean Colombian. 60% cacao. That's, I think 60%, it's a sweet enough, but not bitter enough for the average person.
You are Italian by birth?
I'm in Northern Italian from Lombardy, which is the northern state of Italy.
And you are a pastry chef.
I'm a pastry chef, correct.
What does that mean to you?
A pastry chef is a scientist, an engineer, an architect, a philosopher, an artist. But when I say artist, that took me, I would say literally more than 20 years to feel that I belong in that department of arts, because it takes years to master what I do, to learn all the functions of how ingredients work with each other. And you try to perfect them and then to make them something that is exquisite. So the decoration or the art is the last component, you know, that you have to feel good because you are offering it as a gift, or you as a customer might be intrigued by sharing it with your guests or family.
I think I might. So yeah. In other words, the insides have to meet the expectations of the outside.
That's right.
The visual expectations mm-hmm. that you have.
Or more, or even higher.
Or exceed them. You say it took you 20 years. How'd you start?
Well, I started. I was fortunate and I'm grateful that I had a Swiss uncle still living. I'm talking in the past because it was many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, it's 42 years ago when I apprenticed under my Swiss uncle. His name is Emil Waldis from Lucerne, but he immigrated to this country, first to Canada and then to the U.S. and was in New York and worked at a very high exclusive hotel there in New York, the Four Seasons.
Yes, I would say that was pretty exclusive.
Yeah, and he had a very pressure job, and after 6 years decided to move to Virginia, and that's when he decided to start his own company. So in looking at what he needed obviously an apprentice. So I'm in Italy, and I wanted to learn English. So I came as a student originally at 15, almost 16, and I apprenticed with him for 8 years.
Now, where in Virginia were you?
In Lynchburg.
In Lynchburg, mm-hmm. Okay.
I came with the intention that pastry, I thought, well, I'm going to have a good time learning, you know, and I'm going to enjoy eating all those goodies. But I had no idea that was the mystery or the gift in the box, because once I put my hands in chocolate, that's it. I knew that that's what I wanted to continue.
Now, why? Because most people taste chocolate and say, this is for me,
yeah,
but you put your hands...
I think even early on when I was a young boy in Italy, there were already clear signs that dictated that I was destined to become a pastry chef. I'll give you, well, there are two examples. One, I was not more than 9 years, 8 or 9 years old. Can you imagine 8 or 9 years old? What would prevent a young boy to say, well, I'm going to take some butter and some sugar, a copper pot, which I borrowed from my grandmother, and I went into the woods where hazelnuts were growing. I picked hazelnuts, cracked them on rocks, and in the pan, I made a caramel and added the hazelnuts. And then I poured them out into wax paper and I made sticks. And I was giving them out to my friends.
Had you watched someone do this?
No. To this day, I say, where did that come from? So to this day, caramel, it's one of my favorites.
It won't do to dream of caramel, to think of cinnamon and long for you.
You come over to this country, you apprentice. What's an apprenticeship like to a fine European pastry chef?
Normally, an apprenticeship is taken very seriously because you're learning a trade. And I want to point out that those of out there in the world that would like this profession, don't be afraid to ask someone if you want to have a mentor, because that's how knowledge is passed on. But at the same time, we have to do also the work. We have to do the technical aspect. But also the important aspect is the theory. So you have to educate. And of course, you know, we go to school for that. And that's how the apprenticeship program in Europe is generally done. You work for someone under the tutelage of a master, and you go to school at the same time. And then at the end of three years...
Regular school.
Generally after you have completed your primary school, you would go to a technical school where you would learn, you know, science, mathematics, commerce, business, because these are all components of what goes back to your original question, what makes a pastry chef, because you have to be all those things.
Do you remember when you came to your uncle's, the first things he had you doing as an apprentice?
As an apprentice, you are right next to him continually. So you are kind of like, excuse the term, his slave. But in a good way.
In a good way.
So you learn to clean. You learn to be organized. You learn to take notes. You learn to practice at the end. Kind of like every day, every afternoon after the shift ended, you kind of took some chocolate and you made a paper cone. That's what I use as a writing tool. You make a cone and you add liquid chocolate to it. And then on wax paper, you kind of do whatever drawing you would use. And then you try to duplicate that with a piping.
Wow.
Okay?
And
so you have to train your brain and your hands to work together.
And I cannot tell you how impressed I am. I'm going to try to take a picture of this box.
Well, I want to also emphasize that when you do the actual decoration, it's done so quickly that you only have one chance. Because if you mess up, you have to recoat the bomb all over again. And believe me, I've done my mistakes. So that's another point, that it's okay to make mistakes, because that's what, you know, as long as you don't do it more than once.
I love that you said you learned how to clean, because that's actually very important in a commercial kitchen.
I would have to say it's probably half of the work, that because it's continually, if it's everything disorganized, you don't have space, you have to have order.
Bake in the kitchen.
After a break to talk some more with Stanton's Giancarlo, creator of Giancarlo's fine European pastries.
This is how you do it right. This is how you do it right.
Back before the break, we were hearing how Stanton pastry chef Giancarlo came to this country to apprentice with his uncle, who was Swiss by birth and also, according to Giancarlo, Swiss by inclination.
If you know anything about Swiss people, they are very structured, very determined, almost kind of like in a stubborn, good way, all right? And early on, I already saw that my uncle wanted to train me to think for myself, not to, you know, do it this way. Otherwise, we become robots. But if you think for yourself, and once you understand what the responsibility of the shop, then you kind of know what needs to be done. You look at the order board. I say, well, okay, well, there are 10 cakes order. All right. So I need to prepare the cake bases. There are creams, the fillings. Is that all organized? Because there is a French term. It's called, in culinary terminology, mise en place, which means things put in order, mm-hmm. put in place. And so you have to organize your time and your work based on all the components necessary for what to use.
You start doing this at 15. You mm-hmm. do it until you're 23. Did you enjoy it? Did it feel like work? Did it feel like you'd come home?
We all kind of like a marathon runner, okay? You cannot go out there and say, okay, I'm going to run a 25-mile marathon. You have to work up to that. Our body have to get used to it because you are working long hours in this line of work, and it takes a long time to get up to that. Therefore, we reach our wall. And, that's an honest answer. You know, there were times where I was ready to give up, but somehow there are voices inside you and people you consult with, they encourage you, keep doing it. Because at the end, we have to become something. And it's always an unknown, right? But once you realize that this is what you are going to do, this is what I am, it's very pleasing to the soul. I mentioned the soul. That's another important one.
Absolutely. And we are going to give the soul its due. But first, I want to just know, when did you go out on your own? Did you work with your uncle?
I worked with my uncle for 8 years, and then I was newly married. We were looking for a change mm-hmm. because, again, I'm saying it delicately and diplomatically. When we work for families, we tend to have a whole different concept. You know, we work very hard for the family as a whole. But I was ready for a change. And rather than going south, we went north. We went to Cleveland. And there I was hired as a young pastry chef at an exclusive Jewish club. So the chef was Austrian. The retiring pastry chef was French. And the general manager was German. So it was great dynamics. And I became friends with a French retiring pastry chef. It was a great experience. But the reason I'm saying it in those terms is because there is the word I love very much, especially as an Italian, destiny. For some, destiny doesn't enter into their vocabulary, but destiny is very important.
Meaning?
Meaning that what it's going to happen, will.
Hey, said I, whatever will be, will be. The future's not ours to see. Hey, said I.
Next came a stint in Cleveland, then 6 years at the homestead, where Giancarlo worked in a kitchen that sported 24 different nationalities. People all working together, he says, for the common good. And then Giancarlo went back to work for his uncle, this time as a chef.
I love good food. So in essence, a good chef should also be able to make pastry. But for a pastry chef, there is an old saying that if you learn cooking first and do pastry later, you become heavy-handed. But if a pastry chef becomes the chef, then you already acquire the finesse, because the affinity to flavors is, I think, is much higher.
Many careers ago, owned a couple of restaurants.
You did?
That, yes, and cooked in the much lower level than yours. But it's a grinding, hard business, and you look so cheerful. I can remember chefs who were beasts.
Who were beasts. Well, that's the old approach, because it's not really their nature, but when it comes to work, you have to be focused mm-hmm. and attentive to what you are doing. The reality is, if you are working with expensive ingredients and you make mistakes, what's going to happen to those ingredients? So that's the aspect of being responsible and careful of how you execute.
So it's just focus.
Focus. Very intense focus.
Back in the late 80s, Giancarlo moved to Charlottesville, where he opened Café Giancarlo. Then came some more stints as a cook before he ended up at Keswick Hall.
the chef was South African, French trained, very intense. His name was Alan. Normally, when you are hired at a very high-end restaurant or hotel, you have to do some form of a test, like cook something to show what do on some level. I didn't have to do that, except that once I decided to work there, he put me through a ringer. Okay, I'll respect, because we don't know each other until we get comfortable with one another. Until one day we had words in the walking refrigerator.
Yes.
And then he started smiling. That's it. That's what I want to see. I want to see the real you come out to stand up, because you have to communicate in a kitchen and not be afraid to say something if you don't agree.
So when did you leave Keswick?
In 98. At that time, I want to point out that the Baha'i faith had come into my life. And kind of I said, wow, how come I never heard of this before? So upon doing investigation, discovering that the prophet founder Baha'u'llah spoke volumes to me in the sense of work, because work is worship. And it kind of made all sense for me in the I didn't put a notation here.
No, take your time.
I don't want to paraphrase. I want to say the right thing. Well, it's under the heading, prayer is both a blessing and an obligation, because prayers bring healing to the soul. It brings joy and happiness and protects man from tests and difficulties. It is essential to the life of the spirit. You know, we are spiritual beings. Therefore, this life is to acquire virtues. I'm getting emotional. It's nothing wrong to be emotional and to be grateful for what we have become. Prayer is the spiritual food of the soul. A physical body which is not fed regularly becomes emaciated from malnutrition. It sickens and dies. The same is true of the soul of man. The spirit must be fed regularly and well, or it will suffer the same loss of power. It too will sicken. While it never dies, it becomes so helpless that it exists in the form of death. For example, if a man lets his arm hang at his side without ever using it, soon the power to move the arm vanishes. The arm has become atrophied and useless. A man's soul without the nourishment of regular prayer also becomes atrophied and useless. Then the part that enters work. Beside that, the prophet founder have left a rich legacy of beautiful, uplifting prayer. His faith instructs man to remember that prayer is by no means limited to the use of these prayers. Work itself, Baha'u'llah says, is worship. One's daily work, when done in the spirit of service to mankind and performed to the best of one's ability, is prayer of the finest kind. We have made this your occupation, identical with the worship of God, Baha'u'llah has written. He teaches that one's whole life should be a prayer. Every thought, word, or deed devoted to the good of one's fellow man is a prayer in the truest sense of the word. God created us and wants us to be good human beings and to help one another. If this is the tool, I mean, at the end of the day, we have to nourish ourselves. We eat. We have to enjoy it.
When did you open your Stanton pastry shop?
Well, that's a very good question, because when I left Keswick, I had my briefcase and another suitcase in one of my hand. I was on my way out the kitchen, and a young French waiter called out, Giancarlo, what are you going to do now? And instantaneously, right there, I knew. I said, I'm going back in business for myself.
Giancarlo's Fine European Pastries is open in Stanton for retail sales Friday and Saturdays. You'll find pictures and a link on the Spark page at WMRA.org.